coming, you know. Got to have a little sense of the dramatic around here. I mean, you know. I got to tell you what happened to these kids. To give you a little background. You're dying to hear the background. You said these phenomena happened to you twice. Here are the kids telling the tale of what went on in the house. What happened the second time? Well, the second time was last night, Bob replied. Now, you've heard this before, but I got to warm you up a little. I only got a page and a half. Got to make it last the whole night. Or is it the whole week? Of course, you could go out and buy the book. Yeah, you've tried, haven't you? You got it with you? Well, anybody else got it? Anybody else here got it? None of those people. Is the one up there? On that shelf? Go check, Mike. Get their address. There's some real needy people out there that find out where Gloria's parked. I have three books I can auction off tonight. What happened the second time? Well, the second time was last night, Bob replied. Only Dee and I were here. This time Dee was in her bedroom, not taking a shower. When I came out of the bedroom, or out of the bathroom, I heard the radio on downstairs. The stations were being changed slowly. Now, I only brought this so we'd have something for the atmosphere. You can take pictures there. I mean, I don't want to fall behind tonight. Don't want anything to delay this. When I came out of the bathroom, I heard the radio on downstairs. The stations were being changed slowly, and I yelled down, "Leave that one on." But when I walked down the stairs, no one was there except the dog. He was snarling viciously at something in the room. That was really strange. Really strange, because he couldn't have heard anything. Our dog's deaf. Then I remembered the other night, and I ran upstairs and went to bed. About 5 minutes later, the footsteps started downstairs, making the whole house vibrate. And the furniture started being thrown around again. I was scared the first time, but this time I was really scared. "Do you hear it too, D?" asked Ed. "Yeah, just like he did. I even yelled out to Bob, 'Do you hear it?' And he hollered at me, 'Shut up.'" "When you were in your room, did you see or feel anything unusual?" Ed asked him. "No, nothing. How about you, D?" "Well, the more scared I felt, the louder everything became downstairs. The second time, I also saw a dark purplish cloud in my bedroom. I could never look at it directly, only out of the corner of my eye. When that purple ball was in my room, I kept my eyes closed so I couldn't see it. As I lay there, my hands were closed up in tight fists. All of a sudden, I felt another hand try to force mine open. It was a really strong hand, like a grown man's. It couldn't get my fist open, so it yanked at my arm and tried to pull me out of bed. It pulled me almost halfway out of bed before I screamed for help. Every time I read that, it just blows my mind. Then it let go and I ran into Bob's room. Well, I want to tell you what happened. Those kids got so scared, they decided to dress. Dee, he wouldn't even go to her room. She put on Bob, her brother's clothes and shoes that would wear a blister on her foot later. And they made up their mind it was time to go. And they ran like scared rabbits. Ed asked them, did they see anything out of place? And they went through the house. I didn't even look, Dee said. All I remember about the inside of the house Bob went on was that the radio wasn't playing. It was buzzing like it was picking up static. Anyway, we got out of the house and decided to run up to the university campus to call somebody. I'll never forget that. There were dogs outside. And when they saw us running, they started to run with us, too. But when they got close, they ran backwards. And the birds, as we ran along, the whole woods were full of screeching birds. 11:30 at night. On the left side only. Then a force settled in on them, taking their breath away. But they will never go see Star Wars. They lost all interest in the force. They was running, they couldn't get anywhere, like the way you run in a dream. Somehow we did get to the street light. From there we could see the house. We weren't that far away. The screeching birds died down a lot, and under the light we felt safer. At least we didn't feel the pressure pushing down on us anymore, but the light seemed to be getting dim. They finally decided to make a break for it and ran all the way to the campus. Called their parents. Now, Ed and Lorraine, the Ghostbusters, are getting this story. And when they get it all, they've decided there is demonic presence in that house. They ask the family to leave. It only took them a minute to go. And Ed and Lorraine remained inside. Now I'm getting close. They knew the children could not have made up their story. It contained too many specific details that could have been learned only through experience. Indeed, nothing the children had said was new to Ed and Lorraine. All the details the children had related squared with demoniacal activity they had encountered in the past. Now, however, their task was to discern the true nature of the spirit presence in order to dispel it. To determine if the spirit presence is human or inhuman, Ed says, I have to resort to religious provocation. It's a dangerous but also a revealing tactic. Almost anything can happen in this kind of situation. So if I have to provoke, I send people away. Lorraine can usually determine because she's psychic. Ed says, since I'm not, I must use provocation. And he talks out of his experience. I skipped this last night. Of some of his experiences in trying to provoke these demon presences. Now remember, Ed and Lorraine are famous Ghostbusters. They were called in on the Amityville horror case. They were called in by West Point, the commander. They had a ghost there that stole billfolds. I don't believe any of this. That's why I'm going to hire a Ghostbuster to go check all this out. But these people are too reliable. It ain't names and places. You don't get the attention of the commandant of West Point by handing out personal foot washing kits. You don't get invited to lecture on the David Susskind show or on the Queen Elizabeth just because you're giving away free vials with dirt from Jesus' tomb in it. They were called in on the Devil in Connecticut case. Any of you been reading that story and finishing it? These people are reputable. But it's the most unbelievable crock of stuff I ever read. I embarrass myself every night reading it. I mean, Annabelle, rag doll that moves around. And then they got these tape recordings of the devil talking back to them. And they've had all this experience. Speaking from my own personal experiences, Ed Warren says, I've been burned with these invisible forces of pandemonium. I've been slashed and cut. These spirits have gouged marks and symbols on my body. I've been thrown around the room like a toy. Physicalized monstrosities have manifested before me, threatened death, ruin of my family, and afterlife torment. Nor are my conclusions based on isolated incidents that happened under questionable circumstances a long time ago. I'm talking about activity that's going on right now. Now, we read the Pentecostal Clarita's demon possession in the Bilibid prison in Manila. I read the evangelical missionary to China's marvelous study. He did away, really, with Tyler's psychological theories on demonism. One of the most scholarly works, Introduction by Merle Unger of Dallas Theological Seminary. And this is the Catholic frame of reference. I keep telling you, it's unbelievable, but it's true. Scare the hell out of anybody is what he'll do. Ed Warren's office is located in a small cottage-sized building attached to the main house by a long enclosed passageway. We were finding these books, Mike. Still checking? They're hard to find, aren't they? Well, have you got the publisher's name? Well, are they telling you it's out of print? There's a paperback on it? Well, why can't you get it? When are you going to get it? Tomorrow morning? Well, I could give this one away then. I got about five more stories and I better not finish any of them. Just bring them up to the brink. Ed Warren, let's give you a little bit of their experience. So you're introduced to them. Only hours before, Ed and Lorraine Warren had returned to their home in Connecticut after having been called in to investigate claims of a haunted house on Long Island's South Shore in a pleasant residential suburb of New York City. In December 1975, the house had been purchased by George and Kathleen Lutz, who moved into it around Christmas of that year with their three young children. A year before the Lutzes bought the house, the eldest son of the previous owner murdered the six sleeping members of his family at 3:15 in the morning of November 13, 1974 with a 35 caliber rifle. Reported in the New York Times, November 15, 1974. On January 15, 1976, the Lutzes fled from the house, contending that they had been victimized by manifest supernatural forces. It was a case that later came to be known as the Amityville Horror. They made a movie about it. Let me see. Just so hard to get these books organized every night. There it is. You ever read that book? You saw the movie. The movie was lousy. The book is something else. The Amityville Horror. A True Story by Jay Anson. You ever read that? You hadn't read that? I believe you folks haven't read anything. I stared into the mirror in sheer disbelief. That's not me. That can't be me, I screamed. I, Kathleen Lutz, am a young, blonde-haired housewife with pale, soft skin. But that's not what I saw in my reflection. I had turned into a disgusting-looking 90-year-old hag. My hair was white and scraggly. Ugly creases and crow's feet scarred my face. I drooled all over my shriveled-up, dried skin. It was the work of horrible, evil spirits that plunged my family and me into chilling terror for 28 days and turned our dream house into a hell house. Turn the page now. Go on with the story. The problem to which this book addresses itself is one which, although it is as old as mankind, needs to be brought to the attention of thoughtful readers today. All civilizations have expressed some sense of insecurity and fear over the spotty, but recurring reports of phenomena that leave men feeling victimized by hostile beings with superhuman powers. February 5, 1976, the 10 o'clock news on New York's Channel 5 announced it was doing a series on people who claimed to have extrasensory powers. The program cut to reporter Steve Bauman investigating an allegedly haunted house in Amityville, Long Island. Bauman said that on November 13, 1974, a large colonial house at 112 Ocean Avenue had been the scene of a mass murder. 24-year-old Ronald DeFeo had taken a high-powered rifle and methodically shot to death his parents, two brothers, and two sisters. DeFeo had subsequently been sentenced to life imprisonment. 2 months ago, the report continued, the house was sold for $80,000 to a couple named George and Kathleen Lutz. The Lutzes had been aware of the killings, but not being superstitious, they had felt the house would be perfect for themselves and their three children. They moved in on December 23rd. Shortly thereafter, Bauman said, they had become aware that the place was inhabited by some psychic force and that they feared for their lives. They talked of feeling the presence of some energy inside, some unnatural evil that grew stronger each day they remained. And this is the book of the Amityville Horror. Made into a movie, not a very good one. And it was none other than the demonologists, Ed and Lorraine Warren, Catholic lay people, that were called in on that case. By the end of January 1976, the press had become fully aware of the Lutz's family's claim of bizarre experience in the house and promptly called experts into the case. The experts brought in were Ed and Lorraine Warren. Over the course of some three decades, Ed and Lorraine Warren have investigated over 3,000 paranormal and supernatural disturbances. Now, if you've never encountered a one, then don't rule out the story of Ed and Lorraine Warren out of hand. Most of the world today does not believe in Christianity because the basis of Christianity is the bizarre claim that Jesus Christ rose from the dead and that that vindicated his other claims, which could only be made by someone divine. Without the resurrection, he could have been a fool or a fake. But the resurrection vindicated it. I lost my faith in university because I was told, doing my undergraduate degree in history, miracles can't occur. I still remember my graduate course in historiography. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John were discounted out of hand as poor historians because they reported miracle. Since the supernatural cannot occur, anyone who reports a supernatural event has got to be a gullible, inaccurate reporter. He does not qualify as an accurate historian, because he's reporting what simply could not occur. Therefore, he's not worth reading. Since a resurrection can't occur, anyone who says it does is a poor reporter because he's reporting what couldn't occur. Therefore, he's not worth reading because a resurrection couldn't occur and anybody says it did has to be lying, and you can't lie and be a good historian, so historians shouldn't read liars, therefore don't bother to read them. Because resurrection can't occur, anybody says it did, has to be lying because the resurrection can't occur. Since the resurrection can't occur, it didn't occur, anybody says it did, it has to be lying because the resurrection can't occur. There's no such thing as demons and supernatural forces. I told you that, I don't believe this is a crock. I'm an intelligent man. I did a PhD at Stanford University. Not one of my professors had ever seen one of these things. Therefore, they don't occur. Right, that's what I said. Got my PhD in 1957, but 1963, I was 150, 180 miles north of Manila in the heart of the headhunter country where they still were taking a few and began to watch a witch doctor perform. In subsequent years, I've seen them in the back country of India. Not the tourist ones, as I've said, the real McCoys, the spiritualist services. In Brazil, in the back country. In Haiti. I began to realize that when you stay in an ivory tower and close your mind, a lot of things you think don't occur are going on. You just don't know it. Now, this has to be a crock. No such thing could happen. Ed and Lorraine Warren have investigated over 3,000 paranormal and supernatural disturbances. You say, are you going to get back to those kids? Absolutely. But you need to have a little background. One sec. The question the news media had essentially wanted answered was whether there was a ghost in the house at the time. The answer the Warrens gave at the end of their 3-day investigation, however, was something no one had bargained for. Indeed, their answer literally strained credulity. Yes. The Warrens disclosed at the time, in our judgment, there was a spirit that had plagued the Lutzes in that house. But they also concluded, no ghost was present. What did this paradoxical statement mean? Did this imply there were other kinds of spirits than ghosts? Incredibly, the answer the Warrens gave was, yes. There are two types of spirits that are encountered in true haunting situations. The Warrens explained on March 6, 1976. One is human. The other, however, is inhuman. An inhuman spirit is something that has never walked the earth in human form. Now, you say you believe that? Well, I told you I don't believe any of this. I'm finding it more and more believable. I don't believe it. There ain't no way in front of maybe 25 million people out there I'd admit I believe this. You think I'm stupid? I'm going to wait until you tell me you believe it. But I'm telling you what I said about the Bermuda Triangle. Do you believe those planes just disappeared without a trace? Well, yeah, I believe that. Well, you believe that all of it has a rational explanation? Less and less sure every minute. But now, what do you mean by rational? If you mean by rational only a human explanation, no, I don't think it has a rational explanation. I think there's some other force at work in the Bermuda Triangle. What do you think it is? Well, we'll see, won't we? But at least this is clear. There's too much going on there to ignore it. Well, you believe Atlantis existed? Yeah, I do. Where do you think it is? Well, I believe it's in the sea that got its name from it. What do you think happened? I think it sunk, just like Plato said. Well, what do you think was on it? Strange things. You think it might be connected to the Bermuda Triangle? It might be. We'll see, won't we? Was there any connection to all this to the pyramid in Egypt and Stonehenge? Yep. What's this got to do with demons? Well, some of them maybe came into being first on Atlantis. When the sons of God mated with the daughters of men on the earth. You think that's the only source of it? No. Would you agree with the Warrens? Some spirits human, some inhuman? No. I'm not sure. Could be, couldn't be. We'll see, won't we? I agree with the Warrens that some of them give off the appearance of being human and inhuman. But if them spirits are what they appear to be, they wouldn't have any difficulty materializing and representing themselves as a departed human. Getting cold in here. Now, if you can turn the cooler off and it keeps getting cold, then start getting nervous. But the Warrens believe there are two kinds, departed human spirits and inhuman spirits. And then while they're seeking to expose what they know about inhuman spirit workings, which they said was what was going on at the Amityville horror case. We've got another one we've got to get into now. Needs to be done right. The movie didn't do it right. They come under attack. Ed Warren's office located a small cottage-sized building attached to the main house below an enclosed passageway. As Ed sat working on preliminary details of the Amityville case that fateful February morning, the latch at the end of the passageway snapped open, followed by the percussive boom of the heavy wooden door. Footsteps then started toward the office. Ed leaned back in his chair, waiting for Lorraine to enter with a much-needed cup of coffee. "In here," Ed Warren called out. Long moments passed, however, and she didn't appear. "Lorraine!" Ed called out again, but there's no reply. What he heard instead, building in the distance, was an eerie, howling wind. It was not the whistling of wind under the eaves, but rather the menacing roar of a distant cyclone. Goose flesh rose on his arms. "Lorraine," he asked forcefully, "are you there?" Still no response. as the ominous, swirling sound built in power and intensity, Ed quickly thought back over the last few minutes. It then occurred to him that he had heard only 3 footsteps in the passageway, not the continuous tread of a person walking. Something was wrong. Suddenly the desk lamp dimmed to the strength of a candle flame. Then suddenly the temperature in the office plunged to that of a walk-in freezer. A rank, pungent smell of sulfur rose in the room. Suspicious of the unnatural clamor, Ed Warren opened a desk drawer and withdrew a vial of holy water and a large wooden crucifix. He then got up and walked a few steps out of his office into the anteroom. As he did, there swirled out of the passageway a horrendous, conical whirlwind. Pointed at the bottom, broad at the top, the thing was blacker than the natural blackness of night, far larger than a man, and the swirling black mass moved into the dimly lit room and drifted slowly to Ed's left side and came to a halt some 10 feet away. Now, I know I read this to most of you, but now that we have followed the Warrens to the Donovan house, to the place in Connecticut where little David was possessed, in the book The Devil in Connecticut, and to the house where the 2 nurses were with the raggedy doll. You know, there's a certain kind of tendency to want to giggle and say, are we supposed to take this serious? But after you encounter so many, it sort of comes through with a little different meaning. As Ed watched, the swirling black mass appeared to grow even denser and blacker than it was before. Indeed, within the swirl, take a picture of my pipe. You got my cameraman listening to me instead of taking pictures to scare you. As Ed watched, it appeared to grow even denser and blacker than it was before. Indeed, within the swirl, he could see that something was beginning to take shape. An entity was beginning to manifest in physical form. As a demonologist, Ed Warren knew he had to act quickly, to take the initiative before this fearsome black mass transformed itself into something even more forbidding and dangerous. Holding the cross toward what was now rapidly changing into a macabre-headed specter, Ed stepped forward. The moment he did, however, the entity moved defiantly toward him. Ed stopped and stood his ground as the form slowly drifted forward. When the swirling black mass was no more than a few feet away, Ed methodically and with absolute determination showered the thing and the sign of the cross with the contents of the holy water vial. Then he spoke the ancient command, "In the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to leave for eternal seconds." The black mass stayed motionless, no more than a foot away from the cross. Then slowly it began to back off, though not before giving Ed a clear vision of himself and Lorraine involved in a potentially deadly automobile accident along the highway. Then the entity withdrew into the passageway from which it came. An enormous sense of relief came over Ed Warren. Who are we leaving? My Lord, are we leaving somebody? Who would leave at this hour? I'm just getting started. I'm reading about Ed and Lorraine being attacked by some demonic force when they were trying to write their report on the Amityville horror case. Ed drove the damn thing out. Now, some people would say that's swearing. That's what I can never figure out. Don't you think the devil ought to be damned?
Yes, sir.
Don't you think he is?
Yes, sir.
Don't you think his demons are?
Yes, sir.
Well, let's be accurate then. He drove the damn thing out. An enormous sense of relief came over Ed Warren as he stood sweating profusely in the freezing cold room. Yet, as he attempted to collect his thoughts, the vicious snarl of fighting animals suddenly erupted outside the house. Immediately, Ed realized there were no animals fighting. The visitation was still in progress. The entity had simply moved upstairs to attack Lorraine. Avoiding the passageway, Ed flung open the side door of the office and ran up the back steps of the house. He would be too late. Now, I know you folks in Dallas and Steubenville and other places like me finished that, but I've already read it to people. I mean, you should have been here a couple weeks ago. That one took me at least 3 days. All I'm reading it for is to give you a little sense of what these Warrens have been involved in. They were called in on the Donovan case. And now, they got pictures. Pictures of bed sheets being thrown around, levitation in progress, refrigerator moved with a chair on top of it, bottle of Coca-Cola being levitated in the basement, doors being disengaged and moved, and appearing downstairs. I'm not going to tell you the way they said it happened, but you wouldn't believe it. Lamps being levitated. You say that's all stage pictures. Well, there's sure a lot of people are cooperating in the big lie. Now, what happens is as you read these stories and you see the interconnections of the Warrens, they're called in on the Amityville horror case. They're called in on the devil in Connecticut, the murder case of Arnie Johnson. Now they're called in by these Hillman people. And it occurs to me, I never did finish Annabelle, did I? We just had that carpenter get scared and say, give me some of that holy water. I keep thinking I finish these things. Now I've lost the place, the one I was reading. I can't believe this. I've lost the place. Oh, there it is. Now they've been called into the Hillman home and the events that occurred there. Three kids, Dee and Bob and Melanie, that have been seeing all kinds of things go on in their house, hearing furniture thrown around, feeling a force field that presses down on them when they try to go up the stairs. Finally, they run out of the radio being turned on, the knob and the dial moving. They race out of the house and the presence follows them. Finally, the Warrens are called in. They've been getting a report from the kids, and they finally tell the Hillmans to leave, and they're going to try to deal with the spirit presence in the house, which has already been recognized by Lorraine Warren, who's a clairvoyant. The existence of the presence. And in the process of moving up to the final room where, I guess I could say, they corner this spirit, Ed is sharing some of his experiences. He says, I'm not a psychic. I have to provoke the spirit presence. Knowing what I'm up against, many times I'd feel more comfortable, he says, when I'm doing this, carrying a tire iron and a shotgun. But you can't kill something that's existed since the beginning of time. Nevertheless, when I'm there alone, this is Ed giving a little bit of exhortation in the process of getting us ready for the final assault on the spirit presence in this Hillman house. When I'm there alone, the house is still and quiet. Nothing seems wrong. If there's a place where the disturbance is localized, then I'll go to that area first. If the family told me there's no specific locale, then I'll just go from room to room until something happens. If a ghost is responsible for the problem, then it'll usually show itself to me as I'm going through the house. But if it's a demonic spirit sworn to hate God and repulsed by the religious objects, then sooner or later things will let go. The temperature in the house will drop until it's freezing cold or rise to oven hot levels. Up will rise the stink of some foul odor. I may hear something explode. A threatening voice sounding like no human being you've ever heard will order me to leave. I may hear footsteps, telepathically projected, running upstairs. This is a ploy to get me to follow so I could possibly be cornered in some room. Unseen hands may scrawl an obscenity on the walls in front of me. Other times, none of this will happen. And then when I least expect it, the spirit will betray itself and begin to manifest in black. And why does this religious provocation process work? Is it me? No, Ed says. It works because the demonic spirit hates, and I mean hates, any mention of the name of God or the use of religious objects. This entity is so full of guilt, hate, and jealousy that religious provocation is actually painful to the human or inhuman spirit. In the Hillman house, the Warrens work together. That's what we read now last night. They proceeded from the lower rooms upstairs. When they started to go to the upstairs, climbing the staircase to the second floor, neither Ed nor Lorraine could get any more than halfway up. Pushing against them was an impenetrable, unyielding force. Says Lorraine, it felt like we were walking shoulder deep against a powerful, fast-moving river. As much as they resisted, the power being exerted against them was impossible to overcome. Slowly the Warrens backed down the stairs so as not to be knocked over backwards. At the bottom of the stairs, for a brief second, diabolical laughter rang out. Annoyed, Ed threw more holy water on the stairs, which caused the pressure to diminish enough to let them reach the top. The second floor was partitioned into bedrooms. A long hallway ran the width of the house. Ed sprinkled Melanie's room with holy water, then recited the expulsion command without incident. That room bound, the Warrens moved to Bob's room next. The lightweight door, which had stood open before, was now closed. Ed turned the knob and pushed the door open with his fingertips. To their relief, the room was vacant. Again, Ed went through the binding procedure without trouble. Dee's room was the last stop. The door to the older girl's room was also closed. What awaited them on the other side, the Warrens did not know. Ed twisted the doorknob, cracked, cracked the door ajar, and then swung it wide open. They both stepped back involuntarily. There was something in the room. Though invisible, it projected a horrible sense of misery. It was an absolutely heartbreaking emotion projected by an entity that is damned to perish. Yet the Warrens knew better than to react to this emotional ploy. It was but a ruse, an appeal for sympathy. Instead, with a steely composure, Ed walked into the room, cross in hand. Though no physical presence was there to be seen, the bedroom was freezing cold. One last time, Ed threw holy water in all four corners of the room. then. That's where we were. We finally got back to it. I think I've worn you out. I don't think you want me to finish. Do you?
Yes, sir.
Then. Commanding, he stated, in the name of God, show yourself now or leave. The dead silence lingered. Give us some sign of departure. Ed said aloud in the empty room, or exorcism will be conducted here this very day. Almost instantly, now, what happened almost instantly? I don't believe you want me to finish. I think I've taken so long I've made you mad now you don't want me to finish. I really believe you don't want me to finish. I don't want anybody getting mad at me in Dallas-Fort Worth.